Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Let me direct the question a little more. Does Mr. Reed have a reputation for being qualified?
Yes.
Based on everything that you know about this case, was it a low-quality dummy round that killed Ms. Hutchins?
No.
And whose responsibility is it to ferret out any possible live rounds on a movie set?
It's the armor's responsibility.
And sir, I want to ask you, have you ever worked on a movie set where you discovered live rounds?
I have.
And how did you discover them?
I came in initially as a day player, then left the show. Unfortunately, the prop master had a health issue. The show called me back in to do run of show for the rest of the show, so I'd been gone and did not know what they had, what the equipment was, et cetera, et cetera. So the first thing that you do is an audit of the entirety of their equipment. So I went to the safe, went through all of the safe, all the firearms, looked at everything, went through all of their dummy rounds that they had available, and I picked up, you've done this long enough, you can just pretty much know it by feel. I picked up a box of 12-gauge rounds that were used for set dressing, which is just decoration such as this handkerchief or that pair of glasses on a set in a scene where these bad guys were just loading their guns, getting ready to do something bad. And that had apparently been used in a scene prior to me being on the show. I picked up the box of shells, and they were in a plastic container. I immediately felt the weight was wrong on them. And I took one out, looked at it, and it appeared to be live to me. I took it back to the workstation, dissected it, and it was a live round. At that point in time, regardless of the health issues that the prop master had, I immediately contacted him and said, what happened? And I said, we're shutting everything down. We're taking everything out of this truck, getting rid of everything on this set immediately. And he said, absolutely.
Okay.
And that's what we did.
So you actually just stopped production?
I stopped our part of it. Nobody was getting a firearm out on set, period.
Okay.
They can film the scene on the beach if they want to, but no one's getting a firearm at that point.
And you found the live ammunition by just doing your inventory, correct?
That is correct.
On a movie set, whose responsibility is it to maintain chain of custody of a gun?
It is the armorer.
And whose responsibility is it to maintain chain of custody of ammunition?
The armorer.
In your opinion, should Ms. Gutierrez have given the gun to Mr. Halls?
No.
Should Ms. Gutierrez have given the gun to Mr. Halls and then left the room?
No.
And let's say that she's got prop duties. Is that an excuse for an armorer to leave the room and leave a real gun out of her sight?
Unfortunately, no.
When you are an armorer on a movie set, and let's say you also have prop duties, how do you prioritize those things?
They generally, if it's a movie where they only have a few firearms, you can work props on the days that there's no firearms present, and armor on the days that that weapons are present. But on intermingling, the two never shall meet. In other words, if there's firearms on set and you're doing prop duties, you're an armorer. You're not a props person because you cannot do both jobs adequately.
Okay. And are you aware that October 21st, 2021, she was actually, that was one of her armorer days?
I was not aware of that.
Based on your review of the documents in this case, who loaded the gun before it was handed to Mr. Halls?
Ms. Gutierrez.
And on a movie set, whose responsibility is it to ensure that anyone handling a gun on set has received proper training?
The armor.
Mr. Bowles asked you a question about whether or not it would be difficult for a young armorer just starting out to perhaps ruffle the feathers of, I think he referred to him as an A-list actor. Mm. And you indicated that that might be a difficult position. Is that right?
That is correct.
Is the armorer required to do it anyway?
If it becomes a safety issue, yes.
In your opinion, on the set of Rust, was it a safety issue?
Yes, it was.
You were asked some questions about Ms. Zachary being Ms. Gutierrez's boss, and I want to ask you, in the film industry, can the prop master tell the armorer what to do with regard to firearms?
They can administratively tell them what to do with firearms, i.e., you know, we're not going to use any today on scene for this reason, or maybe they choose to get the firearms from a different location that the armor wants, but from a safety standpoint, the armor is the final say.
Okay. And you were asked some questions about the safe that was used to hold the guns in this case. Were you aware that Ms. Gutierrez actually picked out the safe?
I was not. Excuse me.
And you were asked some questions about Mr. Baldwin demanding that he have his real gun during the blocking. Who permitted the real gun to be used during the blocking rehearsal by Mr. Baldwin?
Objection and speculation.
What are you going to say about approaching from now on? Come up on every objection.
Do you recall the question?
Could you repeat, please?
Who permitted the real gun to be used during the blocking rehearsal by Mr. Baldwin?
Ms. Gutierrez.
All right. I don't have anything else. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Your Honor, may I ask a few more questions?
Do you have any objection to that?
As long as they remain within the scope of redirect, I do not have an objection.
Go ahead.
So, a few more questions on that last question.
You're not certain whether, or do you know whether Mr. Hawes handed Mr. Baldwin the weapon?
It's my understanding that he did hand the weapon off to Mr. Baldwin.
And is it your understanding as well that Ms. Gutierrez-Reed was not in the church at the time Mr. Hawes handed him the weapon?
Also true, yes, sir.
Okay. And with regard to the prop duties that were discussed on redirect, were you aware whether production was directing Ms. Gutierrez-Reed to focus more on props duties?
I was not.
Okay. Were you aware that on the day in question there were a number of props that needed to be present?
No.
Councilor Crouch. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Councilor Crouch.
The state calls for an
Face the judge, raise your hand.
Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
All right. Have a seat. Talk into the microphone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Ryan Winterstern.
And would you spell your last name for us, please?
Winterstern.
Thank you. Mr. Winterstern, were you involved in the Rust movie?
Yes.
And what was your involvement?
I was one of the producers.
And as a producer of the movie, can you give the jury an idea of what your description, your job description was as a producer?
Me specifically or the producers in general?
You specifically.
I was one of the producers who helped procure the financing for the film.
Okay. And were you on the set of the filming pretty regularly?
Yes.
Okay. Would you say that you were on the set every day?
Yes.
Okay. And what would you typically do while you were on set?
It just depended on the day. Sometimes I'd be a liaison for the actors.
Okay. The primary reason that we've asked you here today is because the defendant testified at an OSHA, or actually it was an Occupational Safety Board hearing. And during the hearing, she testified that she spoke to two producers, one named Ryan and one named Nathan. She wasn't clear about the last names, but she did identify the first name. She said that she had come to Ryan and Nathan and complained that she needed additional armor time to work, in particular with Mr. Alec Baldwin concerning his cross draw. Do you have any recollection of a conversation with the defendant about her needing additional armor time?
I don't recollect that conversation.
Okay. And do you believe that she had that conversation with you, that it would be something you would have remembered?
I believe so, that I would, if the conversation did happen.
Okay. And did you have many conversations with her?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So it's likely something you would have remembered, you say?
I assume so.
Okay. Thank you. I'll pass the witness.
Cross-exam.
Good morning, Mr. Winterstern.
Good morning.
I believe you said that your involvement pertained to financing, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is the financing of a film gathering investors to contribute money for the funding of a film? Is that what you mean by that?
That could be part of it.
Okay. Now, can anyone just invest in a film, or do you have to be an accredited investor with a high net worth?
I believe anyone can invest in a film.
Okay. Is it true that a film that's made here in New Mexico can have, it actually receive about 40% of its costs back as a transferable and sellable tax credit?
I don't know the exact. There is a tax credit, though.
Okay, you don't know the specifics, but would you agree with me that there is a tax credit where you get costs back?
Yes.
And that tax credit is in fact transferable and saleable?
I don't know specifically. I know that at some point there is a credit that can be monetized.
Okay, and that credit that's monetized, that would be there regardless of whether the film even makes money at the box office, right?
I believe so.
So would you agree with me then that Rust was essentially a tax shelter?
I don't understand the question.
Okay, do you know what a tax shelter is?
I don't know the definition.
What is your? I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing here. So do you know what a tax shelter is? Basically.
Objection. Asked and answered.
What if I tell counsel, because of the outburst yesterday, everything is approached. So come up.
Now, you're one of the producers on this film. In the beginning, were there six producers for the film? Or was it 10?
I believe there were six people listed as producers.
Okay, and who were all the producers of Rust?
So there was myself, Alec Baldwin, Ryan Smith, Anjul Nigam, Matt Delpiano, and Nathan Klinger.
Okay. Now, to me, I'm not greatly familiar with film. That sounds a little top-heavy to me. Is that normal for a low-budget film to have so many producers?
I don't know specifically. I would say it could. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Okay. And part of the producer's job, you mentioned financing, but it also involves the budget for the film, right?
Well, I mean, in terms of what?
In terms of the budgeting for how funds are going to be allocated to make the film.
Oh, a budget is made, but that would be by the line producer.
So you're saying that just the line producer makes the budget? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the line producer is the one who creates the budget.
Did you have any role in helping create the budget?
I received the budget. I saw the budget, so I was part of the process in terms of I was able to see the budget.
All right, and you then approved the budget also, right?
Objection.
Mr. Winterstern, did you approve? Were you involved in approving the budget in this case?
I would say that my role was to procure the financing to match the budget.
I see. Okay. And you became involved in this film. It was several months prior to the actual filming, right?
Yes.
How many months was it?
I don't know for certain, but roughly I would say 3 to 6 months would be safe.
So for 3 to 6 months before starting to film, you collaborated with the other producers to plan this film, right?
Yes.
And you planned who to hire?
Can you be more specific?
Sure. Who to hire in terms of the hierarchy? For instance, Gabrielle Pickle.
Yes.
Okay. And who to hire in terms of who is going to assist with props, armors?
No, that would come more closer to production.
Okay. Well, you were a producer, right? Oh, so but did you were you? I guess the question is, did you have any involvement in the process of hiring the armors?
No, not that I can recall.
But your planning did involve what resources to allocate, right? To the various departments for the film?
No, not that I recall.
Okay. Are you aware of the original budget for this film? I think you did say you were involved in the financing and reviewed the budget. So were you aware the original budget for this film was $7,000 for the armor, $7,000 for an assistant armor, and also funding for a full-time prop master?
No, not that I recall.
Okay. Are you saying that you don't recall what it is, or that's not what you remember?
I think what I'm saying is that the line producer creates the budget, and it's predicated on union obligations, and so they would create that predicated on what that would be. I don't really get involved in the what they call the below the line aspect of it.
Okay, so the below the line, you are above the line, right?
I believe a producer is part of the above the line.
And as a producer, you don't know what funds were set aside for the armor?
I did not know. Not that I recall.
Do you recall what day filming actually began?
Just specifically?
Right.
I know it would have been in October of 2021. I can't remember the exact date. I would assume it was early October or around October 10th.
Okay. And do you know how many total filming days were allotted for this film?
I believe it was, at the time, I believe it was 21.
Okay. And you said you didn't know, I believe, specifics on the budget breakdown for what was allotted for the armor, part-time, or assistant armor, all of that. But were you aware that it finally came down to the set having just a part-time, non-union armor with no assistant armor?
Like I said, I wasn't involved, so I don't recall specifically how those decisions were made.
Were you aware that Hannah Gutierrez was only working as an armor part-time? She was also working as props. Were you even aware of that? Was there an objection, Your Honor?
Yes, he's good.
Are you aware of what was finally allocated in terms of the armor for Rust?
I don't recall.
Are you aware whether there were any other armors who were willing to take the terms and the pay that was being offered?
I don't know. I don't recall.
Right. I think you said on direct that you were on location. You were on location every day, right?
Yes.
And once filming began, you were actually present for some of the filming itself, right?
Yes.
Okay. Who was the actual signatory for the Rust Movie Productions, LLC?
My understanding is it to be Ryan Smith.
And he was also one of the producers, right?
Yes.
And he was on location during the filming as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. Was the owner of the Rust LLC ever at one time Alec Baldwin?
I'm sorry, can you ask the question again?
Yes. Was the owner of the LLC who owned the rights, let me rephrase that, to the movie ever Alec Baldwin or his company?
That was my understanding.
Okay. So I want to be clear. So if I understand what you just said correctly, Alec Baldwin was at one time the owner of the rights to Rust LLC?
Objection.
What can you
just a minute, he objected.
I think I know. So with respect to ownership of the movie rights, what was your understanding of Alec Baldwin's ownership?
That he had at some point commissioned a script or through his company, and that him or his company had controlled that script.
Okay, and you said had controlled that script. Did Alec Baldwin, to your knowledge, ever sell the rights? back to Rust?
Yes, that in order for the film to get made, the rights were transferred to Rust Movie Productions LLC, from my understanding.
Okay. And was any part of your job as the producer to give direction to the stills photographer?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Were you, you were also there on location when the shooting occurred, right?
I was at base camp.
Right, and base camp is on location, right?
Yes, I assume so then.
Well, I want to make sure you said previously, I believe, that you were on location every day, right?
Yes.
So you recall being there on location the day of the shooting?
Yes.
What did you do? I guess, how did you become aware of the shooting?
I heard it on a walkie-talkie.
Okay. And once you heard that, what did you do?
I headed towards set.
Okay. And when you got to set, is it true that Ryan Smith was already there on location?
Yes, from what I remember.
And there was actually an attorney representing the production company there on set too, right?
That I do not know.
Okay. You don't remember talking to an attorney on the day of the shooting?
I do remember there was someone, but I don't know what their role was specifically.
Okay. So sitting here today, are you saying you don't remember if there was an attorney on set the day of the shooting?
No, like I said, there was an attorney.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know specifically what they were doing there.
Okay. Did you know that attorney, whether or not that attorney represented the production company?
I did not know at the time, no.
Do you know that now?
No, actually, I don't know.
Okay. And after the shooting, did you see Alec Baldwin at any point?
Yes.
Right after the shooting, when you ran up there?
I don't recall exactly when I saw him specifically, but I do remember seeing him at some point after the shooting.
Do you ever remember seeing Alec Baldwin outside the church making phone calls after the shooting?
Yes.
And was Mr. Baldwin also there with his assistant Jonah at the time?
Yes.
And this is after the shooting?
Yes.
And did you talk to Mr. Baldwin in that moment?
I'm sorry, which moment?
The moment after the shooting, when you're there and you see him on the phone?
I did speak to him at certain points, I believe. Yeah, I remember speaking with him.
Okay. And have you communicated with Mr. Baldwin since the shooting?
Yes.
In fact, is it true that you did stay on the production after the shooting and finish the film, right?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Do you remember the morning of when the camera crew quit?
I'm sorry.
Do you ever remember the camera crew in this production of Rust quitting?
Yes.
Were you aware of any of the without telling us right now, were you aware of any of the grievances that the camera crew had about, were you aware of any of the grievances that they had had throughout this production?
Yes.
Were you aware whether any of those grievances had to do with not being properly paid?
Not that I can recollect. Recollect.
Were you aware if any of the grievances about regarding the camera crew quitting were about production ignoring requests about safety meetings?
Not that I can recollect.
Well, were you ever made aware of emails sent to emails sent by the camera crew stating reasons why they quit?
Well, there's only I can only recall one email.
So you were aware of an email that camera crew sent stating reasons why they quit? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't take any steps to try to remedy the situation with the camera crew?
My understanding that the people who were in charge were handling. So I just assume that the people who needed to take care of however that needed to be handled were doing that job.
Okay, and so you assume the people were in charge were handling it. Who would that be? Gabrielle Pickle?
Yeah, she'd be one of the people, yes.
Would that be Dave Hall?
To a certain extent, sure, yes.
Okay. It wouldn't be Hannah Gutierrez, right? She wasn't in charge, was she?
I think the context of that question matters.
Okay. Let's talk about, were you ever made aware of accidental discharges when making this movie?
I was aware of one.
Okay.
That I can remember.
Did you, in fact, you said you were made aware of it. You actually heard it go off, didn't you?
That's how I was aware. I was aware because I heard it.
Okay. And as a result of that accidental discharge on set that you actually heard, did you direct any safety meetings about that?
No.
Okay. Do you believe that's not your responsibility to direct safety meetings? Or to tell your people that you need to do safety meetings? I heard this accidental discharge.
My understanding is that the AD department is the safety officers.
Okay, AD. Is that David Halls also?
Dave Halls would be the AD, yes.
Okay, but AD worked for production, right?
Yes.
And you're a producer, right?
Yes.
And Alec Baldwin is a producer, right?
Yes.
In fact, Alec Baldwin was not only the producer, he was also the star of the film, wasn't he?
Yes.
Would you agree with me that he would have significant influence over things that happened on that film?
I would say as an actor, yes.
And as a producer, right?
Like I say, it depends on the context.
Okay, and as an investor that benefits from those tax shelters?
I'm confused by that question.
Okay, I'll withdraw the question. Just a minute, Your Honor.
Redirect.
Mr. Winston, do you recall the defense counsel just asking you about whether one of the complaints from the camera crew was accidental discharges on the set?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. Do you recall the defense counsel who was just standing up here asking you questions about whether one of the camera crew's complaints was regarding accidental discharges on set?
Your Honor, may we approach?
Yes, come on up.
You are aware of at least one accidental discharge on set, correct?
Yes.
And who would you expect to be in charge, the person responsible for ensuring that there are no accidental discharges on set?
My assumption would be that it would be...
Overruled.
I would say that it would be both the AD department overseeing safety, and also it'd be, I would assume, the role of the armorer.
Okay, thank you.
All right, nothing further. Thank you. All right, we're going to take our lunch break. Please be back downstairs at 1:00. Please don't talk among yourselves or anyone else about the evidence received here in court. Thank you.
All rise.
All right, you may be seated. Does she have one? I can't see. Testing. Next witness.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. The state called Nathan Klingler.
All right. Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right. Thank you. Have a seat. Talk into the microphone.
Good afternoon. Would you please state your name for the record and spell your last name, please?
Nathan Klinger, K-L-I-N-G-H-E-R.
Thank you. Mr. Klinger, were you involved in the Rust movie?
Yes.
And in what capacity?
I was one of the producers.
All right. And as a producer, what were your job responsibilities particularly?
My primary job responsibility was helping to close and raise all the financing and then confirming that the movie got finished.
Okay. So even though you were involved mainly in financing, were you on the set every day or almost every day?
Yeah, I would say almost every day or for some capacity of time.
Okay. Thank you. The main reason we've asked you here today is because the defendant, Ms. Gutierrez, testified at an OSHA hearing that she had spoke to two producers, one named Ryan and one named Nathan, that she had asked you all for additional training time with Mr. Baldwin. Do you recall any conversation like that with the defendant?
I don't recollect that conversation, and I feel confident I would.
Okay. So if she had approached you with this conversation, you believe you would, that's something you would remember,
yeah,
correct?
I believe that, yeah.
All right. Did you have very many conversations with the defendant on the set?
No. No, very few. I don't recollect many conversations at all.
Great. That's it. Pass the witness.
Cross-examine.
Mr. Klinger, I believe I heard you say that your primary role as producer was financing, right?
Correct.
Does financing involve gathering investors to contribute money for the funding of the film?
Yes.
Okay. And so in order to be an investor for the funding of the film, do you have to be accredited, like have a certain net worth?
No.
Can anyone be an investor for the film?
Yeah, if you invest.
Okay. Is there a threshold amount that you would require, in other words, to be an investor of the film?
No.
So I can invest in a film for $100?
Yes, but yes, you could, theoretically.
But what?
That would be a lot of legal work for a very small investment.
Okay. So is it fair to say you're looking for big investments, right?
I would say so.
And do you know, do you have any knowledge of Rust's, if any of the Rust's costs were returned, or the amount, how much of Rust's costs were actually returned by New Mexico tax credits for filming here?
Not directly, I don't believe.
Are you aware of any of Rust's costs being returned by New Mexico's tax credits?
What do you mean by returned?
I guess I mean by being able to claim costs as a tax credit.
Yeah, a percent of the budget would be a tax credit.
Do you know what percent of the budget is a tax credit?
Not directly. My assumption is somewhere between 20 and 25%.
Okay. All right. Who would be responsible for determining the actual budget? And what I'm looking for is basically what was in each envelope for various things to film. Do you understand?
Yeah, the line producer, I would believe.
And who's the line producer?
Gabrielle Pickle.
All right. Does the line producer also collaborate with the production team on budget issues?
Yes.
So as a producer, do you have any oversight over the budget?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what funds were set aside for the armor in the budget?
No.
As a producer, do you consider yourself responsible for ensuring there were sufficient funds available for, let's say, below-the-line workers to have a safe production?
I didn't build the budget, so I wouldn't have knowledge of directly what was allocated to what.
Okay, so you don't consider yourself responsible for that part?
No.
Do you recall any safety issues on set?
I recall when Lane Looper quit, he flagged some safety issues.
Okay, and Lane Looper actually sent an email, did he not?
Yes.
And was that email a day before the shooting death of Ms. Hutchins?
Yes.
And as the producer, did you do anything in response to that?
I confirmed the necessary day-to-day production staff who oversaw the set were on that email, and yeah, I made sure that they were aware of it, yeah.
Okay, and when you say the necessary production staff, who are you referring to?
Gabrielle Pickle and Roe Walters.
Okay. Did you do anything to allot more armor days to the budget?
No.
Were you aware of an accidental discharge that occurred on set?
I don't believe so.
And were you there on location on the day of the shooting?
Not directly on location, no, at base camp.
Okay, is base camp actually there on the location of the...
It's on the ranch, but it was quite a ways from the actual location.
All right. Were you aware if on that day there was an attorney representing the production company there on set?
Not directly, because she, to my knowledge, she wasn't representing the production company.
Okay. So you are aware of an attorney there, right?
Yes.
Do you know who she was representing?
No.
After you became aware of the shooting, did you actually head up to the church?
Yes.
And did you do anything when you went up there?
I remember I helped carry some pews so the ambulance could drive in.
Okay, did you help carry those pews out of the church where the shooting had occurred?
No, they were already outside of the church. I just helped move them out of the way of the sort of entrance to the church.
Okay. And the producers, how many producers were there actually?
I believe there were six.
Are there two producers by the name of Ryan?
Yes.
Okay. What are their last names?
One was Ryan Smith, and one was Ryan Winterstern.
Okay. Now, you said that you were there, I believe, on the day of the shooting. You told us your role. Are you aware, I guess, were you ever interviewed by law enforcement?
No.
Just a minute, Your Honor.
No further questions. Thank you.
Redirect.
Just one very quick question. Are you the only producer with the first name Nathan?
Yes.
Thank you.
Your excuse.
State calls John Ziello.
Yes.
Do you swear or affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do, Your Honor.
Thank you. Have a seat. Tuck into the microphone, please.
Sir, go ahead and state your name for the record.
John Ziello.
Mr. Ziello, what do you do for a living?
I am a grip in the film industry.
Explain to the jury what a grip is.
Grips do the non-electrical lighting, as well as camera rigging, any overhead rigging, mounting cameras on cars, all the fun stuff. We're like the MacGyvers on set.
Excellent. Mr. Ziello, how many different film sets in your career do you think you have worked on?
Hundreds.
You can include TV and
other things. Yeah, hundreds. I work in commercials and television, so quite a lot.
And were you employed as a grip on the set of the movie Rust?
I was the key rigging grip.
And what's a key rigging grip? Is it any different than what you previously described?
Usually you would have a department that's separate from the actual grips. There's a key grip, and then the key rigging grip is a parallel to him. So you have your own department separate from his, but you carry out orders basically from the DP together. So.
And the DP being the director of photography?
Yeah.
And Helena. Was that Ms. Hutchins?
Helena in this case, yes.
During your career, how long have you worked in the film industry?
15 years.
And during the 15 years that you've worked in the film industry, if you can estimate for the jury, how many times do you think you've worked on movie sets or TV with armorers?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 50, maybe.
Okay, a fair number of times.
Yeah.
Were there issues with regard to guns and gun safety on the set of Rust that stood out to you?
Yes.
Can you describe those for the jury? Mr. Ziello, when you were working on the set of Rust, did you personally see issues with firearm safety that concerned you?
Yes, I did.
Will you explain to the jury what's coming to mind as I'm asking you that question?
On two separate instances, I came across the cart where they moved the guns around, the armorists. Would bring them the set and set their cart up, and on two separate instances I came across that cart basically unmanned with nobody around it, and
let me stop you there. Mm-hmm. Was there anything on the cart that caused you to be concerned about the fact that it was unmanned?
Yes, there were firearms and ammunition on top of the cart.
And why did it concern you that it was unmanned?
It's just not something you see normally on a set. It felt wrong, and it looked, anybody could have done anything they wanted to those weapons, and nobody would have known.
In your experience working on movie sets with armorers, is that something that you usually see?
No. There's usually a chain of custody. Gun goes from armorist to actor, back to armorist, back to storage.
Can you recall ever seeing guns and ammunition laying out unattended on a movie set?
No.
Was there anything else with regard to firearm safety that you witnessed that caused you concern?
One instance, we had a large scene in the cowboy town, like in the main part of the Western town, and there were a lot of guns involved in the scene. We had finished the majority, like the big wide part, and I ended up standing next to an actor who still had his pistol in his holster, was not in the current scene because we had moved on to another scene, and he was playing with it, messing around, and I just jokingly was like, hey, don't shoot me, you know, with the, quit messing with that thing. And, you know, I was standing right next to him, and it's not something you normally see.
So was Ms. Gutierrez supervising that actor when he was playing around with his gun?
No, he was standing by, either waiting to go in again, possibly, or hanging out after he had just finished. I'm not sure.
In your experience working on film sets with armorers, are the actors generally permitted to walk around with their real prop guns and manipulate them?
Again, there's usually like a strict chain of custody, they call it, and it's armorers, gun back to armorers, back to storage. You don't usually see them left with the actors.
In your career, have you ever seen that, that you can recall?
I don't think so.
Okay. And, sir, were you present on set on October 21st, 2021?
Yes.
I want to start, why don't we start at lunch, okay? Did you have lunch with the crew that day?
I did.
And how did you get back? And just to be clear, how far away is the lunch area from the town and the church?
About a quarter mile. It's walkable, but there's vans, and you get rides typically. And I had my personal vehicle on set, my truck, and I would use it to go back and forth.
Okay. And on that day, did you drive yourself to the lunch area?
Yeah.
And did you drive yourself back?
I did, but I also picked up Helena and drove her back with me on that day.
And where did you drop Ms. Hutchins off anywhere?
Yeah, right at the church. I dropped her off in front of the church.
And just to be clear, were you in the church at the time of the incident?
I was not.
Let me ask you this, were you close enough that you heard the incident?
I was about 100 yards away. I heard everything. Well, I heard the gunshot go off.
Do you have experience with real firearms?
Some.
When you heard that sound and you were, you said about 100 yards away,
mm-hmm.
Did you have any idea what it was?
I honestly didn't know if it was part of the scene. I didn't know if they had started or not. I did not. It didn't raise any major concern to me until someone came out yelling, call 911.
And is that something that you heard on your radio, or did you see that with your own eyes?
I saw that with my own eyes. I heard them yelling.
To call 911?
Yeah.
And what did you do when you realized that there was some type of an emergency?
I immediately ran into the church.
And what did you do when you got inside the church?
I saw Helena laying on the floor being worked on by the medic. And Joel was to the left. And our dolly grip, Ross, was attending to him. And at that time, all the pews were still really tight up on them. So I immediately started chucking pews out of the way. And I moved the dolly. And I cleared room for them to work on Helena.
And did you stay in the church while they were performing life-saving measures on Ms. Hutchins?
Yeah, I did. I was, excuse me, I was directly involved in first aid with her for a number of minutes before the paramedics had arrived on the scene.
And when you say that you were directly involved in first aid with her, do you have any first aid training?
No, I was just assisting. The medic was having trouble keeping the oxygen mask on Helena's face. She was flailing and tearing it off. And myself, the gaffer, Serge, and our Steadicam operator, Reed, were all around helping stabilize her. I had her head and neck. Serge had her arms, and Reed had her ankles, I believe.
Was it apparent to you that she had suffered some type of a serious injury?
Yeah.
And why was that apparent to you?
She was bleeding and in pain, and I saw the wound and realized it was life-threatening in the area that it was. And
when you say you saw the wound, where was that?
Entry was under her right armpit, I believe, and exit was just inside of her shoulder blades, I think.
And did you see both of those, the entry and the exit?
Yeah.
Okay. And then at some point, were you relieved by paramedics?
Yes, the paramedics showed up, and we all fell back and let them take over.
If you recall, when you were in the church attempting to render aid, did you see Ms. Gutierrez or hear Ms. Gutierrez?
No, they cleared the church pretty quickly. I pushed past whoever was maintaining the door at that moment and went in. But they were trying to keep everybody out of there.
Okay. And at some point then, did you leave the church?
Yes.
And when you left the church, where did you go?
I left the church because they were calling a helicopter and a lifeline or whatever you call it. And they needed a landing zone cleared. And I immediately jumped on Channel 3 with Teamsters and called for the water truck to come over and clear out a landing zone. And I started trying to get vehicles out of the way. I actually hopped in a police vehicle, tried to move it, and quickly had an officer come up and say he would do it.
I'm sure. Did you take note of anything when you were outside the church? Did anything catch your eye?
I believe after that, the helicopter thing, I came back and saw Dave Halls and Hannah having a conversation. Dave Halls was asking Hannah to see the pistol and wanted to clear the gun and look at it and see what was in it. And I believe he retrieved it. I think in my initial interview I said she had grabbed it, but in my notes that I took afterwards, I believe he was the one who actually pulled the pistol out of the church and brought it outside.
And were they standing around or over a cart?
Yeah, there was a black Rubbermaid cart just to the left side of the door. If you're looking at the front of the church, just to the left, it was tucked in. It was already, it's kind of, for shooting, we always tuck things in tight around the door. And it was already there, and they were standing in front of it.
And what were they doing?
They were removing the bullets from the gun and attempting to check them and see which were dummies and which weren't, or what happened.
And did you have any concerns about that?
I did. It immediately felt wrong to me, and I thought to preserve it, I pulled my cell phone out and actually held it up, tried to record that happening. And I was just so flustered that I actually didn't push record, so I didn't get any footage, actually, but I stood there holding my phone as though I were the entire time.
So you were attempting to video record them taking the rounds out of the gun?
Yeah.
Did you happen to see what happened to those rounds?
Yeah, they took them out one by one, shook them, checked them, and I believe they ended up on the Rubbermaid cart as they were going through them.
Okay. And was this a rather stressful event for you?
Yeah.
Were you interviewed by the police in a trailer on October 21st?
Yes.
And have you had a chance to review the statement that you gave?
Yes.
Can you tell the jurors what your thoughts are about the accuracy of your statement?
Honestly, it was pretty inaccurate. I had just found out Helena died 5 minutes before that, and I was very emotional, and after watching it, I misspoke in that.
And why do you think that you misspoke and had some errors in your statement?
I don't know. I think I was just flustered. And I think I said there were 5 bullets when there were 6. It wasn't anything big, but it was just simple, errors.
Do you recall in that interview describing the armorer as a blonde person?
I believe I was talking about her assistant, or who I thought was her assistant.
Okay.
And yeah, but no, it wasn't. I wasn't trying to describe Hannah.
Okay. You understood that Ms. Gutierrez was the armorer?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I'll pass the witness.
Cross-exam.
Thank you, Hannah. Good afternoon, sir.
How you doing?
Okay. Do you recall when you gave that statement mentioning that the blonde hair's assistant had brought the firearm into the church?
Right.
And the blonde hair assistant on the movie was Sarah Zachary. Were you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay. So at the time, at least, when you gave that statement, you indicated that it was Sarah Zachary who had brought the firearm in the church.
I believe I did, yeah.
Okay. Now, you stated today that you gave that interview shortly after this had happened, and it was traumatic, is that, obviously.
Yeah.
So you made several misstatements?
Yeah, I believe someone told me that she handed it off when we were after the incident. And, yeah, I don't know why I purported that.
Okay. Well, and right after that, it wouldn't be unusual for you to make a mistake and something like that. Was it hard for you to even think and concentrate?
Yeah, definitely. I was still crying in there.
And when they interviewed you, were you still on the set? Were you still there?
Yeah, they made us wait around to be interviewed. Anybody who was directly involved.
You also talked about the cart on direct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you need it.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Okay, sir.
Yeah.
You also talked about the cart, and you indicated that when they came out to load, it was the Rubbermaid cart.
Yeah.
And do you recall also that you thought it was the special effects cart?
Yeah, the special effects guys had a lot of gear in and around that area for the scene that was happening. They had a bunch of poppers set up in the church. And I believe their firing station was in that area, so that's why I indicated that.
Okay, that's one of the things you said, though, that they had loaded it by the special effects cart.
Yeah,
okay,
it may have been. I honestly don't even know if that was the special effects cart or if it was the armorer's cart. Now, I can't tell you.
Okay, so as we sit here today, I mean, is it fair to say, because of the trauma of those events, that maybe your memory's affected some, which wouldn't be unusual?
I took contemporaneous notes in the days after and have a pretty good recollection of what happened in that time frame.
Okay. I want to ask you about the incident you were talking about with the cart and the firearms left out on it.
Sure.
Are you certain those firearms were not replicas?
I have no idea. They could have been.
Okay. And when you walked by that cart, do you know what time of day it was?
It was late morning.
Early morning?
Late morning.
Late morning?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what day that was?
I couldn't give you a date today. We had just shot one of the bigger gun scenes where we had, I believe it was the most guns in any scene that we had at that time.
And because of how many guns were involved, did you see the armor and her, or Sarah Zachary, her boss, did you see them attending to those firearms?
During that scene, yes.
Okay. So when you saw the cart, was the scene completed?
Yes.
Okay. Did you see them still dealing with the firearms?
No. Okay. We had moved on into another building, I believe, around the corner, and that cart was off behind.
Okay, in any event, you didn't know whether they were replicas or not. Did you report that to anybody?
No, I did not.
Okay. And the other instance, I think you were talking about kind of joking with somebody that had his firearm still. Did you report that to anybody?
No, I did not.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have any further questions.
Just a couple quick follow-ups.
Okay, redirect.
Your Honor, may I have just one moment? I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. Did you know on that, when you walked outside and saw that cart, did you know whether the prop cart was over by the black tent?
When are you referring to?
Yeah, I'm sorry. When you came out and saw them unloading the firearm,
uh-huh.
Was the prop cart, do you recall it being near the black tent or not?
I don't believe it. Was there a black tent there? I think there was a black tent on the right side of the building, and the cart was on the left side, if I recall.
Okay. The cart that you remember seeing?
Yeah, the cart that was just outside the door to the left.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Redirect.
And just to be clear, Mr. Zielo, did you see who brought the firearm into the church after lunch that day?
No.
The day that you saw the firearms unattended on the cart, you indicated that there was a big gun scene that had just happened?
Mm-hmm.
And just, if you don't mind saying yes for that.
Yes, sorry.
Okay.
Excuse me.
And in that scene that was taking place that day, if you recall, did it involve the firing of blanks?
It did.
Do fake guns fire blanks?
Not to my knowledge.
And the gun that was on the actor, was there anything about it that caused you to think it was a fake gun?
No, that was a real gun.
That was a real gun.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, sir. I don't have anything else. Appreciate you.
All right, you're excused. Thank you.
Your Honor.
State calls David Halls.
More raw courtroom audio from the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial is on the way.
Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment
from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch.
Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.